We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I really can't answer that, Rich. I'm not going to go through a dissertation like that, Rich. That's a question I'm not going to answer, Rich.
Rich Campbell.
Campbell. He stunk in Washington, and now you're trotting him out.
Covering the Bears for the Chicago Tribune.
Willie, what's your...
I'm not Willie. He's the other guy with the dreads.
I'll do a message with you.
Sorry, baby. 2 years now with Vic.
That's two times you're wrong. Not Willie, and it's 3 years with Vic. I'm just messing with you, bro.
All the latest news and notes from Halas Hall.
The guy was 63% at the three-day rookie tryout. That is hot garbage.
Rich Campbell with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Sharp Vision Modern LASIK. The segment brought to you by Amco Total Transmission and Car Care. Read everything this man writes about the Bears in the Chicago Tribune. Thrilled to have him Wednesdays at 3 as part of the McNeil and Parkins mob. Rich Campbell. We're going to talk Mitch Trubisky, but Rich Campbell joins us on The Score. What's up, Rich?
Dude, put you in that hit in the intro, all the drops and mistakes that I've made over the years. I love that.
That's hilarious.
I forgot about that one with Pernell McPhee. Man, that was bad.
There's a statute of limitations. We shouldn't talk about our mistakes more than 4 days after the fact.
That's how it works out here, apparently. It's how it works. Something that we really haven't seen in my memory out here, where Mitch was asked a specific question and turn to the team spokesman for guidance there. I could take you through the specifics if you want to hear them. But
please.
Okay, so what happened was that Trubisky was asked about the 3rd-and-1 sack that he took. It was an RPO that immediately after the game, he said he should have handed the ball off. What ended up happening is he kept it, tried to roll left, and Adam Shaheen was in the flat, covered. The play kind of broke down, and Trubisky went down there. And it was one of the two 3rd-and-1s that the Bears failed to make. So that was quite a big talking point for Matt Nagy afterwards. So he was asked about that 3rd-and-1 and specifically what he is asked to read on those plays. You know, the question was a direct question about scheme. No quarterback or offensive coordinator or anyone wants to answer a question about scheme. When if you ask a guy, what are you reading? Well, they're not going to tell you, because now the other team is going to see, oh, he's reading the defensive end. Oh, he's reading the safety's hips. It gives away some strategy. So Mitch kind of froze in that moment, and he looked over at his PR person, team employee, standing to the side, and the proper response, the response that would have gone well, he just would have said, look, I'm not going to talk about scheme, but in general, there are decisions that we have to make on every play. He could have done that. But he gave up that he had been advised not to talk about the game at all. And that was a much broader, broader statement there. And boy, it just leaves you with a reminder that, what they do not have here is that quarterback with full command of the offense, full control of what's going on the field and the line of questioning, the narrative. It's a team that, because of that first game, it's taken on a little bit of water this week, and it's going to take a win in Denver to bail it out and get them smooth sailing again.
Trubisky said it came from Adam, one of the PR assistants, and others. Do we know who those others are, and where is Matt Nagy in this?
Yeah, no, I don't know who the others are. And if Nagy was the one, then I'd think that you're right, Mac. It adds a layer to this in terms of how the team is handling him. If Nagy were issuing these types of directives, then I think that would be more meaningful. We'll probably have to ask him about it tomorrow. Nagy had his media session before Mitch. He'll obviously be prepared for this question tomorrow, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, it opened up a few questions there, and it's to the point of just what the team is doing to insulate him or protect him or to guide him through a hard week, a hard 10 days, particularly, it's important because of how much Nagy, Mark Helfrich and Mitch have talked in the past about his confidence and being able to move on from negative plays and negative performances. They've been complimentary of that in the past, but here you have one of the heaviest, most disappointing performances of his career. Just considering the stage, the build-up, the way that the expectations were set because of his full offseason in the scheme. And it didn't help that they've had an extra 3 days because of a Thursday night game for the vultures to circle out here. But that's life. That's the NFL. You play well, you get questions. You play badly, you get questions. And for him not to sort of command that moment, I think is I understand why folks who are invested in him and support the team would be disheartened by that.
Are we worried about his fragile psyche?
Until he gets past everything and starts stacking good games together, I think it's fair to worry about that. I think it's fair to worry about everything from how he sees the field to fixes mistakes and repeats mistakes. We were told, you know, consistently from the coaches and Mitch that, you know, he's beyond some of the things that I feel like we saw on Thursday night in terms of seeing the field, recognizing open receivers, huddle efficiency. You know, they took two delay of game penalties on one drive. We were told that they're past that. So his confidence and his psyche, that's part of this. The Bears have made that very clear through all the times last season that, like I said, Nagy and Mark Helfrich talked about instilling this next play mentality, and that it you know, they realized with Mitch early on last season that he would be stuck on negative plays that happened and not move forward as easily as they needed him to. And they thought he got a lot better at that. But he's got to stack positive performances to put those things behind him and to really answer those questions. So, yeah, I think that is something that we're going to have to monitor. And now there's the layer of expectations, which there weren't a year ago. This sort of training ground, proving ground last year in this offense, that's gone now. And so the margin for error seems smaller. The criticism is ramped up, and you feel it right now.
You know, Rich, when we started the show, I was throwing haymakers at the organization and at Trubisky, and a few people said I was way overreacting to this. But I again, and you're just confirming the emotions I had an hour and a half, 2 hours ago when I first heard the news conference today. I'd love to talk about whether the offensive line is going to show up a little bit more this week against the Denver front that's awesome but wasn't impressive against the Raiders. But this is really, and based on recent text we're getting after people listening to you outline your feelings on this, this is a potential pitfall that won't go away, isn't it?
Well, performance dictates that. So if they go to Denver and they play well and Nagy finds balance for the offense and the offensive line does maintain its focus despite negative plays, which Harry Hiestand said was a problem last week, and Mitch sees the field well and he protects the ball and they win, they beat this Vic Fangio team that is going to be, the defense is going to be led by a guy who knows all the Bears' secrets, you know, schematically, that they will. This could be a blip on the radar. It's up to them to make this into just a speed bump. I think, you know, what any, you know, just immediate reaction to this would be is that, look, Drew Brees doesn't need to be told what he can and can't answer at a press conference, and Tom Brady doesn't need to be told what he can and can't answer. And then the reaction would be like, well, okay, we know Mitch is not those guys, okay? From a performance standpoint, from an experience standpoint, from a media savvy standpoint, the whole point, though, here is his growth and getting there and getting him this type of command where, you know, he's comfortable enough to stand up there and just face the firing squad for a bad game and be comfortable knowing that it's not going to affect his mindset or anything else, you know, regardless of what the narrative is, to just go practice and go play this week, just to put all that behind him and go play, and that he's above it, that his skin is thick enough to move past it. And the whole back and forth in that moment is this admissions sort of that he's not. And so the only way then is putting points on the scoreboard. You can't come away with just 3 points. And oh, by the way, it's against Vic Fangio, who knows a lot about your tendencies. I mean, it's a really difficult test for them when they really need a passing grade this week.
We're talking to Rich Campbell, Bears beat writer from the Tribune. I assume it was the talk among the media after the press conference ended. Confirm or deny that. And did you guys say anything to that PR guy? Was there any talk between the PR and the media?
It was the talk, so that is confirmed. And I have not spoken to him. I'm not necessarily sure what there is to say. I mean,
it's
kind of all out there. It's kind of all out there, you know?
Yeah. The only thing I would say is, like, to me, like, my guess is it doesn't come from Matt Nagy because it's just illogical. Or else you guys would never be able to ask Mitch Trubisky about what he learned on film, because he hasn't watched the film when he speaks Sunday. And then if Wednesday he can't answer anything about the last week's game, how are you guys ever going to learn what the quarterback saw in film review?
Well, the team's point to that might be that they don't care what anyone else knows about what he saw in the film review, as long as Mitch has it right. But the Bears, and I think this is a reason that for the most part they've been very open this week, from Matt Nagy and his criticism to some of the assistant coaches we talked to yesterday, that whether they owe their fans an explanation here or not, there's certainly one being demanded because of the expectations that the Bears welcomed on themselves by talking so openly about the Super Bowl and explaining how much progress Mitch has made through the offseason and how he's speaking the offensive language at a higher level. That to some extent, it really does benefit them to make sure that their fans are informed and understand the processes that go on here and create a level of understanding that they're at work, that these mistakes are fixable. And of course, everyone who roots for the team is invested in Mitch's growth. So what my sense was is that, it was a PR move to just steer the narrative away from what has been a brutal few days of criticism for such a big letdown. But to your guys' point, I guess we don't know that. I mean, we'd have to get Nagy's word. And even then, would you expect him to say, hey, look, I told him not to do this? I'm not sure. And really, at this point, the only thing that can fix it is to go win Sunday and go play well Sunday. That's the only thing.
Update us, Rich, on Trey Burton. And why have the Bears not brought in some outside help to try out for the tight end position?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I think you saw the faith in Ben Broniker in this at about halftime of that game Thursday night. You saw it start to fade, and he wasn't on the field as much in the second half because he wasn't blocking in the way they needed him to. He certainly wasn't a convincing option in the passing game. They ended up lining up Tariq Cohen in the slot quite a bit for most of his snaps, and that sort of took the place of Trey Burton there. But they went through an entire preseason auditioning undrafted rookies to play this U tight end position, and none of them stuck. So I think it's more of a reflection of the shortfall or the shortage of that type of player who could come in and help them right away at that position. But as far as the update on Burton goes, I think it's encouraging at this point. Last week when they started practice and he didn't participate, I thought right away, he's not playing. Now, Matt Nagy said he would practice today. That's confirmed. He's out there right now. So I think that is trending in the right direction, that he would go. And we'll see if he does. Obviously, we know his status in particular can change in a surprising way. But I think right now it's going the right direction.
Who are you picking? Who's going to win?
I think I'm going to pick the Bears. And one of the reasons is because, well, one of the reasons is, I don't know if you guys stayed up to watch the Denver-Oakland game the other night. Denver had no juice. They had no juice offensively. I think the defense is banged up for them in a way that it's not in place the way it will eventually be. So if the Bears were at home, I'd feel really good about that. And I don't think they were as strong a road team last year as maybe their overall record, 12-4, indicated. That they went to Arizona last year and barely won. Arizona was the worst team in the league. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Denver won. But I think we are going to see, this is just a hunch, just for the feel you get from being around the building the last couple days, is that the offense is going to look corrected, balanced, more corrected, that they understand that game got away from them in such a bad way and so totally, that I think there will be meaningful improvement. And if I'm wrong, play the clip in the intro next week. Replace all my old screw-ups with that clip, and then we can talk through it.
Yo, we'll mock you for a lot of things, Rich Campbell, because we know you could take it, but we will never mock you for a wrong prediction because we make them all the time.
That's right.
Actually, that's not even a promise I can keep.
The problem now these days is that you have to be able to predict the future in order to be an expert. You can't. I mean, nobody would have predicted this offensive faceplant the other night. I wouldn't have. I thought Trubisky would be more poised. I thought Nagy would stick to the run a little bit more than he did. He's been very openly critical of his own imbalance and how he got away from a game plan that, as we've come to learn, really did include a heavy run element. Why Nagy got away from that, I don't even think he can explain it, and I think he's going to remedy that. That's just my sense, and I will probably pick a low-scoring, narrow Bears victory.
Rich, we're looking forward to having you as a part of the show. We'll talk soon, buddy.
Thank you, Rich.
My pleasure. Me too, guys.
Be good.
That's Rich Campbell from the Tribune. Short timeout, then we come back and play the Dan game and talk baseball with Dan Plesac on the Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Good for the Brewers hitters, not great for Chase Anderson. Yelich crumbles to the ground after fouling one off his foot. It's going to need a minute. Now, the last thing any Brewer wants to see is their best player down. He finally gets to his feet. He's still a fan favorite here. They love him. I think they're going to take him out.
As tough as the competition is and the rivalry and the Cubs fighting for a second wild card spot, the Brewers right on their heels, you don't want to see a potential MVP out for the season with an injury like that.
Yeah, he deserved the award last year. He's been playing like a man who earns it again this year, and that is it crippling? Let's find out from a guy who is Milwaukee Brewers royalty. You can follow him on Twitter at Plesac19, MLB Network's Dan Plesac, joining us right now on the McNeil and Parkin Show. Sack, does this all but end the Milwaukee season?
Dan, I think it's a bigger injury than Baez going down for the Cubs, because Lorenzo Cain has had a down second half of the season. He's lost a little bit of playing time. Moustakas has cooled off post-All-Star break. It's a team that doesn't have the starting pitching night in and night out that can compete. Somehow, some way, they keep finding ways. I know they spoiled. They had a really good weekend last week in Milwaukee against the Cubs. I'm all year looking, seeing how the Brewers are doing it with subpar starting pitching, a bullpen that's been leaking oil all year. But I think this might be the final nail that I think is going to take him out of it. Listen, 18 games left. He is by far and away their best player. And I don't know if they have anybody else that they can lean on. At least the Cubs have Rizzo. They have Bryant. They have other ways. I just don't think the Brewers have that.
So who do you think gets the second wild card in the National League?
Cubs, and I felt like this. You know, I watched the game last night. I'm sure you guys saw it. I mean, they fight. They're down 6-0. They come back into it. And I think what you're seeing is, like, they're up the middle, right? They don't have Baez. They don't have Russell. They have a young guy playing short. Ben Zobrist at second base. He's made a couple erratic throws on, I wouldn't say would be simple turning double plays, but two throws that have gone erratic in two extra games that have cost the Cubs. So defensively, they're not as good. And then you have the meltdown last night with Cishek. You know, looked like just a harmless infield single turned into three consecutive walks. And that's a tough way to lose one to a Padres team that, quite honestly, they need to beat the Padres.
Yeah, little discussion on the internet last night about C.B. Buckner's strike zone. Was that a factor in the way the Cubs lost?
It was on both teams, right? Yeah, it was both, Dan, and I really don't think there were any calls that went against Steve Cishek in that inning last night. He was erratic around the strike zone from the minute he came into the game. And I know the Cubs, they put the, you know, they brought the infield in and they put Rizzo at second base, the five-man infield. And the bottom line is Cishek wasn't able to throw strikes. And you could see that as soon as that count went to 2-0, he wasn't even near throwing the ball to Wilson Contreras' glove. I've been in that spot, Dan. I was sitting watching that game last night, and I'm thinking to myself, he has no chance to throw two strikes here because he was all over the strike zone from the minute he came in. And sometimes with Cishek, that's the case. He has so much movement and so much sink that he really doesn't have a good idea where it's going. It's going to sink and it's going to run, but he wasn't able to throw it over the plate last night.
So did Joe Maddon drop the ball, not taking the ball from Cishek?
Well, this is the dilemma, right? So do you make the move and you go to the lefty and you bring in a lefty to face a righty? He gives up a base hit. I think what I kind of agreed with Joe last night, you have a veteran guy in Cishek that his kind of his MO is to get the ball on the ground, and he just didn't have it last night. I get that, Dan. But if you go to the lefty in that spot and he gives up a fly ball, a sacrifice fly, I think the move that he made was the right move, sticking with Cishek. And Cishek, basically, when they came out to give Anthony Rizzo an extra glove, he was kind of pointing, you know, looking at that like, I'm okay, let me finish it. And he just didn't get it done last night. And that was a really tough game to lose when, one, they gave it away with some shoddy defensive plays. They fight back in. Bryant has a big night last night. That's a game they can ill afford to lose.
Yeah, I thought Maddon was in a tough spot because Margo, the batter, he crushes lefties and is awful against righties. So you really trust Pedro Strop to not walk someone?
No, so I think what he did, Dan, the bright alternative was that last night, and that's one of the tough things about managing. And I know the last week to 10 days, you know, a lot of fans have been skeptical of the moves and the lineups and things that the Cubs are trying to do, but I thought last night sticking with Cishek was the way to go. It just didn't work out.
Dan Plesak with us from MLB Network at Plesak19 on Twitter. Where is optimism big picture for the Cubs? Because I will be honest with you, I am struggling to find it.
Okay, the optimism is this. They're not playing very good baseball right now, and that's probably understating it, right? The last 10 games, they're 4-6. They had a miserable trip up north to Milwaukee, a Brewers team that you would think after they win Game 1 Thursday night, very favorable pitching matchup going into Game 2, right? Because Zach Davies had been struggling. Cole Hamels, that looked like a mismatch. It really looked on paper like the Cubs had every advantage to go up there to Milwaukee and win that series and didn't. So they start on the road trip. They win a game that they're supposed to win, the first game in San Diego. And a game like last night is just one of those. I wouldn't say Quintana didn't have it last night. He wasn't as good and as sharp as he's been. But I look at it this way. If I look what is chasing the Cubs, the Brewers are at a huge disadvantage now without Yelich. I can't get my handle on the Philadelphia Phillies. One game they look really good. The next game they look really bad. The problem with the Phillies is they have one good starting pitcher in Aaron Nola, and the other four guys, they have no idea what they're going to get from them, and they also have a bullpen that's leaking oil. So they can score runs. The Braves are a really good team, and that's who they're playing again tonight. I still think when it's all said and done, I will be surprised if the Cubs don't win the second wild card, and I would be surprised if they do get in. I wouldn't want to play them, and I know it makes no sense, but when I look at this team, if somehow, some way they can get in, last year they looked like a slam dunk. They were going to beat Milwaukee. They were going to win the wild card game. Both games in their own home ballpark, it didn't happen. But I look at this team and I get it. They're not what a lot of people thought they were going to be in spring training, but neither are the Cardinals and neither are the Brewers. So it's a division that has been very mediocre. And what we thought I did was going to be one of the stronger divisions in baseball because you looked at those three teams, and I thought the Brewers would be better. I thought the Cubs would bounce back and be better. None of the three teams, and the Cardinals, listen, they have a four-game lead, but Dan, they wouldn't be a favorite any series that they start against. They're just an average team right now, too.
Yeah, the tough part is for me, like obviously if the Cubs are playing in the playoffs, I'm going to be excited, but the path will be road game in D.C., likely against Max Scherzer, and if for some reason not him, it's Strasburg, and if for some reason not him, it's Corbin, and then say you win, it's fly all the way across the country to play the Dodgers.
They don't scare me, though. I don't know why. They don't. I don't know why. I'm just going to say this. And you know what? I this is just the way I feel. I think the Dodgers have the biggest target on them of any team. The Dodgers, if you want to ask me honestly, I think there's one team right now that I will be shocked if they don't get to the World Series, and that's the Astros. They are like, they have Cole and Verlander, and their third guy, Zach Greinke, and Wade Miley's been miserable his last two. The only thing that you could look at the Astros and say, I'm a little worried, Ozuna hasn't been really good the last 3 or 4 weeks in the ninth inning. I like the Dodgers team, but don't write it in ink that they're getting to the World Series, because I think the Braves could take them down. I think the Nationals, to me, the scariest team if they get in is the Nationals. You touched on it. I want no part of Scherzer. I want no part of Strasburg, and Patrick Corbin's pretty good. But they're like all of the other teams. You get to the ninth inning, they don't know what the hell they're going to do either in the ninth inning. But the Nationals are a good team right now.
Dan, do the Cubs, whatever happens in this postseason, get there, not get there, do they need a new voice next year?
Million-dollar question, Dan. I don't know. Like, I'm not inside that locker room. I do know this. Joe Maddon has done everything that they have expected him to do since he has taken this job. With that said, last year was disappointing at the end of the year. This year has been disappointing. I look at it this way. Something has to be better, because there's a team right here about 40 minutes from the MLB Network studios, the Yankees, that were just crushed with injuries. There isn't a team in baseball that suffered more injuries to key players, and the Yankees have found a way. So the Cubs, for the most part, their starting pitching has stayed relatively healthy. The one exception, their bullpen, you know, they were hoping the bullpen was going to be better, and it wasn't. Morrow was a non-factor this year, and they were hoping he was going to close games. Up until Baez went down, they really haven't had an injury that you would say, wow, they haven't missed Stanton. They haven't missed Judge. The Yankees have lost guys, so I don't buy that injury thing. Maybe it's time, maybe a new voice. I don't know the answer to that, Dan, but I know this. Since Maddon has been a Chicago Cub manager, they've been a really good team. And that, I'm glad I don't have to make that decision, because I don't have my handle on it, because I'm not there daily. But it will be very interesting to see what they do moving forward to 2020.
Hey, because I'm a proud Ball State alum, I have Ball State head covers on my golf clubs. I've got a Ball State football shirt. I need a Ball State baseball shirt now. Zach Plesac, Danny's nephew, last night fires a four-hit complete game shutout. And I've never had a Ball State baseball garment. Zach, as an alum, might have an in on that, but congratulations.
Let me just tell you something. I will make a call to my nephew tonight. You can guarantee you will have some kind of hoodie, pullover, T-shirt, Ball State Cardinals. You will have one in your possession by the end of the postseason. I will make sure that happens.
Awesome.
He was terrific last night. You know, Dan, I get so nervous watching him pitch, because I've been honest. Last week they were in New York playing the Mets and the Yankees. So I went out, and Terry Francona let me go out with Carl Willis, and I watched him throw a bullpen. He threw a 35-pitch bullpen 2 weeks ago on Tuesday. It was the worst bullpen I've ever seen in my life. I mean, Dan, he didn't throw a ball to the catcher's glove. He went to go do his running. I looked at Carl Willis, and I said, God, man, is he that bad all the time? He said he had a bad day today. You know, he had an extra day in between. And, Dan, I've been texting him every day, and we talk like every 2 or 3 days. And I tried to tell him, Zach, stop trying to throw 95 and 96. You're not Clevinger. You're not Beaver. Those guys have their next-level stuff. When you first got called up, you were hitting the glove, strike one, use your changeup. Dan, he was throwing and not pitching the first two innings, and something clicked last night in inning 3 through inning 9. He was the Zach that you and I saw against the Red Sox and the White Sox. He was lights out last night, the last 6 innings. And I texted Terry Francona when the ninth inning, I said, I hope you let him go back out. And he sent me a text message back when the game was over. He talked me into putting him back in the game in the ninth inning. So Terry Francona is happy for him. I'm happy. But, Dan, I'm a nervous wreck when I watch him.
I can imagine. I really get that.
A nervous wreck.
I can imagine. Can
you paint the picture for our audience? What's Dan Plesac looking like and doing when you're watching your nephew play?
Okay. If he walks a guy wherever I'm sitting, I get up and I go to a different seat. I watched him pitch in Yankee Stadium 2 weeks ago. I was doing four games for Fox Sports Wisconsin for Bill Schroeder. So I'm in my hotel room watching the game, right? It's the national game on MLB Network. And Dan, it was like he gave up a home run and I got to change seats. He had me so nervous. Like, I was sweating more than he was sweating. And then when DJ LeMahieu hit a go-ahead home run in the fifth inning, it was like I did it, Dan. I wanted to throw my shoes through the window. I was cursing at the TV. I was screaming at the umpire. You got to help him out here a little bit. So it's every emotion, but he's done a really good job. He's 8-6. He's throwing the ball well.
Awesome. Yeah, it's worse as an uncle or as a parent than it was as a player. I mean, I only played high school, but when my kids were in Little League and high school ball, I was miserable the entire time.
Because you know what? You live that pitch. You've done what your son or your nephew's doing. You know what it's like. And there's something like when you're the one doing it, it seems like it's easier to handle failure because – you're right in the middle of it, but when you're standing there watching, I had a great conversation with my mom 2 weeks ago. I was like, I don't know how you did this for 18 years, like going to go then U.S. Cellular Field and watching me pitch, and if I'm out there getting my ass kicked, like, you know, people are cheering, and she goes, yeah, it's not an easy thing to do. Dan, I'm glad I had two daughters, because I don't know what I would have done. If Zach would be my son, I'd probably be dead by now.
Oh, well, we wouldn't want that.
No!
We wouldn't get free Ball State here.
Hey, dangerous. I know we're on the back nine of life, but I'm not ready that quick to jump in the casket.
Danny, always great visiting. And let Zach know that I'm in a regular XL now. I'm out of the 2X. I'm back into the fitness clothes.
Consider it done. You will have a Ball State stuff before the postseason's over.
Awesome. Thank you, Danny.
You got it.
All right, take care, bud.
Unreal. That is Dan. Please, Zach. Power of the microphone. Get in some free swag.
Oh yeah, I didn't expect anything for free, but it occurred to me this morning, I've never had any Ball State baseball, and now I have a reason to do it. We've had some guys, I can say that, who've gotten to the big league level in the last 20 years. Hell, when I was at Ball State, they were still celebrating an ex-player.
You weren't expecting anything for free there?
No.
I don't know if I got to call who you crapping on that one.
We can resurrect who you crapping.
I'm just saying, you were hoping for the freebie.
Hey, since when is – I missed this, and maybe I miss a lot of things that are done when things are said from the perspective of a bigot. And bigotry is not just about
– hard right turn, Tanny. Get ready.
Yeah,
brace yourself.
Not just about race or sex or religion. It can be ageist in nature or in conversation as well. I just found out this week that apparently – part of the big swipe at millennials is they are fragile. Several have texted that regarding Mitch Trubisky and his inability. When the Bears, in case you haven't heard today, the Bears told him not to talk about the loss to the Packers anymore. And we've been lamenting it throughout the course of today's ride. And a handful of people said, typical millennial. And I know about many of the swipes that are made about your generation,
yeah,
but I've not heard that to be one of them.
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for it. I can get into it if you'd want now or after the break, but one is we go to therapy in higher percentages, and so there is still an old stigma where there is a perception of that as some sort of weakness. Two,
I wasn't aware that that's still I know it's not
waning,
yeah,
but it's still is a thing.
And it's the old people who are saying those who have go to therapy.
I think therapy is more accepted among younger people than older people. If I could speak in absolute generalities, suicide rates among younger people is higher. And so that is part of which, as if you want to use that as some sort of dig, which I think is very heartless, but that's part of it. And then the other aspect of it that I think is a huge contributing factor is because social media now shows us everything and it quantifies everything. How many friends do you have on Facebook? How many likes do you get on your Instagram post? If in high school I'm not invited to the cool kid party, maybe I don't know about it. Or if I do, I hear about it like 3 days later, overhear someone telling a story about what happened on Saturday night. Now people are posting about it on Instagram as it's happening, so you're seeing what you're missing out on.
Ah.
And so the public nature of the social experience has led to, you could call it fragile, but I would just say normal. human emotions and experiences. And so it's when you hear like Kevin Durant, he's just profiled in the Wall Street Journal. He goes back and forth with random people on Twitter because you've got a line into Kevin Durant's pocket. Mitch Trubisky deletes his social media accounts during the season because he doesn't like to have the feedback and get that direct tie to him because he thinks it's counterproductive. So I think when people see that, oh, you can't handle Instagram, but you can handle Vic Fangio's defense, they equate that choice as weakness, whereas he's just making the choice to not be paralyzed by the endless stream of feedback. Like if we get a lot of feedback on a text line and a Twitter account, imagine what a guy with a couple million followers who's the quarterback of the Bears does.
You
could do it all day. Mitch Trubisky could read comments about him on the internet all day, every day.
Thank you for illuminating that terrible misrepresentation of your generation. My feeling is that is not specific to an age group.
We know plenty of sensitive old people.
Yes, we do. we do. Some of the guys alluded to in a previous hour might have been outside the millennial age range.
Yeah, so that, to me, I have always tried to defend that notion. It's an unfair swipe. It really is.
And because it's something else, what it is.
Well, it's also just people not growing up with the experiences, right? Like, I don't know what it's like to grow up with a draft. I would imagine that would be a formative thing.
Well, it is draft day.
Not that kind of draft.
I can see why you would think that. We don't know what it's like to grow up with, kids today have school shooting drills. I can't imagine what that's doing to the psyche of students.
Sure.
We didn't have that. My dad would tell me about they would have, nuclear or atomic bomb drills. Get under the desk, put your head between your knees, and kiss your ass goodbye.
Thank you for not saying nuclear like I heard a CNN reporter over the weekend say. It's like, really? Take away the microphone.
But so when people say, oh, you can't handle social media, it's like, okay, well, we didn't grow up with it. It does, for better and worse, it just changes the experience.
You know, it's conversations like this that lead me to the first season of True Detective, when the noted philosopher Woody Harrelson was playing. McConaughey was Rust Cole. Help me with with Woody's.
I was going to give you
what
Rust
the hell
Cole.
Was Marty Hart.
Marty Hart. Yeah, there it is. Hart.
Marty Hart. When he's arguing with his father-in-law is talking about people today. Mm-hmm. He's bitching, and he says to him, you know, since the beginning of time, people have been complaining about the way things are and how good they used to be. But that world just keeps spinning, doesn't it?
Sure does. Every generation before you complains about the generation after you.
Yeah.
It's a tale as old as time.
My hope is that I'm not part of that baby boomers group that likes to throw just sweeping generalizations, because I'm pretty close to two of my three sons who are millennials, and around you guys all the time. I look at you guys as peers.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I don't find there to be
success.
And I'm writing about the biggest differences in a new song. Hopefully it'll be debuted this football season. Although we could have a heck of a Mitch album in progress the way this thing has started.
We're going to commission Spiegel for the Mitch album part two.
I'm living in a millennial world, Madonna, and I've been penning that. But it's nothing about sensitivity. It didn't even occur to me that would be.
It's
the difference in movies we like. It's the difference in the way people pay for things today. It's those sort of things that have been funny. The things that make us different have been funny to both sides of this,
Of course.
But there's not been, people need to chill, man.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Wolves, your Western Conference champion. Chicago Wolves open the season Saturday, October 5th. For group and season tickets, visit chicagowolves.com. We're doing Charge on a Wednesday at 4 o'clock today, since we got a Cubs day game tomorrow and Friday. So get your either-or questions ready for that. Hey, the Bears have a new tight end. We'll give you the details on who it is next on The Score.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Let's talk Bears, okay?
Bears! September is back to school safety month. AAMCO's free multi-point inspection includes a free brake check, and they offer expert repairs to ensure your vehicle can stop safely. From transmission, engine repairs, brakes, maintenance, and everything in between, search AAMCO for the location near you. That's AAMCO. This segment also brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The Bears sending out a release that they have claimed tight end J.P. Holtz off waivers. They waived Abdullah Anderson, their defensive lineman. Holtz last played for Washington. He was a Pitt Panther.
Yeah, he's a big dopey-looking white guy.
As many tight ends are. He's never played in a regular season.
That's very, very true.
He's never played.
Historically.
Yeah.
There's a stereotype with which I agree.
Oh, and harmless, not said with malice, so, you know, it's fine.
Well, I don't know how harmless dopey looking is.
It's not the meanest
it's
thing.
It's better than fragile.
Yeah, probably.
Yes,
sure.
Yes.
Sure. So these guys never played in the NFL. It probably won't make much of a difference, but ask a question at 3:14, get an answer at 3:45. You asked Rich Campbell why they hadn't brought in another tight end, and here's the guy they're bringing in.
What's his name again? J.P.
J.P. Holtz.
J.P. Holtz? H-O-L-T-Z? Like Lou Holtz or T-S?
H-O-L-T-Z, like Lou
Holtz. H-O-L-T-Z, Holtz.
That's right.
Okay. I wonder if he'll be any good. Luke Wilson still has not received a call from a team. And I'm not talking about the Luke Wilson who played Roger Goodell in the movie Concussion. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the recently released former Raider. Parkins mocks me anytime I mention Luke Wilson because he thinks it's exclusively Hard Knocks related.
And Canadian. It's two. There's two factors. Three.
He's like half a Canadian, though.
Yeah, well, he's been
because
in the NFL.
He's from Windsor, which is essentially Detroit.
Well, you still like anything that has a little Canadian in it.
Yes.
Which is fine.
Okay.
So, yeah, you're scouting off of Hard Knocks in Canada.
Well, he can run a little bit. He's played in the league more than J.P. Holtz.
True. The Bears.
And like J.P. Holtz, Luke Wilson is a dopey white guy.
I really hope that this is not a sign that Trey Burton is not going to play, because I know that Bears fans have tremendous skepticism of Trey Burton. But this system does really need a good tight end who can move and operate in the middle of the field.
Right.
And they run those option routes where he can read the defense and then settle into the zone. Like, Kelce and Ertz just eat in this offense. And they paid Trey Burton from Doug Peterson's system in Philly. They paid him to be that guy when he had no real production to speak of because the brief times that he got in behind Zach Ertz, he flashed a pretty high ceiling. So they really believe in Trey Burton, and he really hasn't shown you much.
Hey, anytime we talk about great tight ends, let's not let the conversation end without George Kittle's name being mentioned too, because he
I just mentioned the same system.
Yeah, I know. You did. But I've been reluctant in singing his praises. I was a year ago, and I remain that this year. I think that's the first time I've said his name since, well, the season is only 1 week old, right?
Well, but I don't know how much of that game you watched. I had
I watched it because I have George Kittle on my fantasy team.
So, I have him on one of mine as well. Tough week for George Kittle, fantasy user. He might have had the toughest week in terms of the handcuff situation of any player. Two touchdowns taken off the board by penalties.
I only saw one of them. I didn't see the second.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Two touchdowns taken off the board by penalties.
54 receiving yards, I believe.
Yeah, well, and one of them was just a monster play where he catches the ball over the middle and the guy just bounces off of him. He staggers for 2 seconds and then 15 yards scamper into the end zone. I also thought it was a tough week for Todd Gurley fantasy owners because he was dominant, but they kept touchdown vulturing him with Malcolm Brown.
Yes, and was it he or Elliott who got to 97 yards? Because
weeks
have that 100-yard bonus. Yeah, the guy gets the 97, and then plus he gets poached at the goal line.
The toughest one for that, I thought, was if you were starting Jameson Crowder.
If you're starting Jameson Crowder in a league that wasn't PPR but that had 100-yard bonuses, he caught the ball 14 times for 98 yards, I want to say. So 14 catches, not crossing 100 yards is tough.
Of the awkward lines, slash lines, if you will, for football players over the weekend, I don't know if there was an uglier one in advance of Paul Charchian's regular visit, although we usually catch him on Thursdays. We're not going to be here tomorrow because we're preempted because of the Cubs. Sony Michel of the Patriots carried the ball 15 times for 14 yards.
Not great, Bob.
That will leave a mark on one's ego. Bill Belichick told him today, don't talk about our game this past weekend against the Steelers. I don't want you talking about that anymore.
I'm sure, yeah, that was a tough spot. Patriots running backs, man, it's draft them at your own peril.
Yeah, it is.
James White's going to be targeted in the passing game, so he's fairly high floor if you're playing PPR. But on a week-to-week basis, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson, last year, they would just all of a sudden put him in the backfield.
Got goal line carries, right.
Why I thought Sony Michel was pretty safe, though, was because they drafted him in the first round.
Yes.
I was like, if they're using a first-round pick on a guy, they're going to use him in the game plan.
I think he's a stud. I think his talent is going to demand they get him the football, and I don't expect just because he didn't do well this past week that they will back off of that a whole lot. He may not have 15 carries again, but I expect him to be a huge part of their offense. And let's do a better job getting people lined up here for Paul Charchian and fantasy football in our either-or scenario. We don't want to hear about your roster, man. Your toughest choice between two dudes.
Yeah, feel free. If you need to include that it's PPR, that's fine. But two players, it's a starter sit, so maybe it's two wide receivers, or it's a running back and a receiver for a flex, or battle between two quarterbacks. We want you to give the player and the opponent, and then player and the opponent, so that everyone at home can play along with what's going on. So an example would be
Mitch Trubisky at Denver, or Joe Flacco at home against the Bears.
Exactly.
Sad Trombonski.
That's exactly right. And you should have a lot of either-ors this week. Week one overreactions, that sort of thing. Everybody's playing, no buys to deal with.
And if that's your choice this weekend, the example I just gave, just quit now.
Yeah, you're in big trouble, and please invite me into your league for next year. So 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. Your toughest either-or for Charge next on The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.